Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for this, the Limar Technical Net. Limar Technical Net has been going strong for 42 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together and teach each other and learn from each other and entertained, hopefully, by each other and not annoyed by each other. If you're not having fun, you're doing it all wrong, guys. Anyway, most of those years were done under the auspices of Dick, KQRIW. Fortunately, a few years ago, he passed away and became Silent Chief. And so, in his memory, we continue the technical net for the benefit of us all, I hope. And I appreciate people coming and joining me and trying to make this an enjoyable experience to be had by all. Let me drop for a moment, and I will give you the usual link. Okay, if you want to reach me, and you can't do it via the radio, then you can use email. Now, the reason for that in relation to the technical net would be we used to have this mailbag section of the technical net in which people who could not reach us via the repeater would send emails in, and they would be read by a person working on the tech net to Dick, and Dick would treat them as someone who came in on the radio. So if you have a question and you can't be here tonight, you can email me the question, and if it's chosen to be answered, you can either listen to the audio stream, which we'll talk about a little bit later, or you could go to one of the archives of the technical net and just play a particular file and listen to the answer. Also, if you have a topic for discussion, now sometimes people have a topic that they have a particular interest and knowledge in. When it comes up in the popular press, they would like to explain it to the rest of us. So they contact me and they say, Roy, I would like to give a little talk on such and such. Would that be okay? Always is okay. Otherwise, it might be that I'm interested in a certain subject. I really don't have enough knowledge to do a presentation, but I would like to hear it discussed. I'd like to be one of the people that talks during that time, which is great. And then we have others that say, look, I don't know anything about this, but I am curious. So if you could have a bunch of people talk about it, and I'll just listen, that's fine. So those are the reasons. Also, if you have a puzzle, I am perpetually looking for interesting technological puzzles, primarily amateur-related, but we'll accept any fields of science and technology. I have some puzzles in my back pocket that are basically astrophysics and coffee, which has a scientific basis. But any kind of puzzle. I would prefer puzzles that are not very easy to Google the answer for, because I think the journey is more important than the destination. So if you have a puzzle like that, please email it to me. Also, if you have a question that's space-related, NASA-related, you'd like to get full space on it, either contact him directly, his email address is spacenet@gmail.com, or you could email me, and I'll pass it on to Paul. So my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, it's mailbag@ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. I have a link page. Every week as I'm reading interesting stuff at the back of my head, I'm saying to myself, do I think the guys at the technical net are going to be interested in this or not? If I think maybe, I will tag it and put it together in a little link list page. You can go to it at any time. It's available 24/7. Interesting YouTube and articles and all kinds of fun stuff. So if you want to check that out, there are a few people who do, because occasionally you get the links wrong, and they notice that, and they tell me, so I'm glad to see that they're looking at it. The way to get there is to type in roy.ac2gs.com on your browser, and that will take you to my link page. We have a chat room available, sometimes very, very busy, sometimes very, very quiet. So if you want to avail yourself of the chat room, very easy to get there, go into your browser and type chat.ac2gs.com. That'll get you there. We have an audio stream. I stream the Technical Net every Sunday night, and because some people ask me to keep it live for the rest of the week so that they can listen to Glenn Oaks or Peter when they're not within radio distance. To get there, you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the audio stream. And I always want to remind people of my KC2NJI's great amateur TV website. It has archives of other nets, but it has a particularly complete archive of the Limehouse Technical Net going as far back as September of 2006. So you can use this to extract all kinds of wisdom from very, very smart hams that have either moved away from the area or passed away and become silent TV. So check it out when you got a chance. Again, it's amateurradio.tv. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, well, last week, unfortunately, Paul was under the weather, but thankfully, he's feeling much better. So we're going to have our SpaceNet report, as per usual, sometime around 10:15. The earlier portion, we will be taking questions, as we often do, or topics, or conversation, or comments. So if you have any of those, preferably amateur radio related, at least for the first few questions. As time goes on and people run out of amateur radio questions, which I don't understand because I have so many of them, then we'll be open to taking any kind of science or technology, and I will try my best to offer some input and maybe some source material. So with all that in mind, anyone out there who would like to be on the list for tonight, read the questions, the comments, or topics of discussion, hit that push talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
W2BC. N2, Peggy Jillian. Will the achievement human animal never achieve from the beginning on the planet Earth?
Fine.
I didn't get the person after Wesley. I just got one syllable. Sounded like it said, let.
WS2N. Real question.
Oh, okay, very good, Paul. You're on the list. So I have Rich, W2BZ. I have Wes, M2XJN. And I have Paul, WS2N. Anyone else out there want to put their name on the list?
Jim, KD2BHD.
Okay, Jim recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? I'm sure we'll have openings for later on, but if you want to get your name down to begin with, then feel free, hit that to push your talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
And to XJN, with a question to our space record professional about the new satellite, geodetic satellite, inspecting the amount of water on the planet, if he has some news about it.
Okay, I assume Paul wants to cover that on the SpaceNet report, but I leave it up to him when he would like to address that.
I'm not sure if the question is something about water on a planet, and good evening, Wes. So, no, whenever you want to do that, Roy, ham radio questions usually go first.
That was about the new satellite that was launched. That is made to see everything that is wider than 10 meters, every water, and that is for us to know how much of water or drinking water do we have on the planet Earth.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll cover that later. That's the SWOC. That just went up, Wesley. I copied that down. Very good. We'll cover that. Yeah, that's supposed to be very, very accurate. They're going to know exactly how much How many drops of water we have in the whole Earth by the time they're done. Very good. We'll cover that later. No problem. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. We'll cover that at that time. It sort of reminds me, Wesley, I don't know if you remember it yourself, one of the earliest conversations I remember overhearing between you and John, may rest in peace, was that you could not find a legitimate list of rivers in the United States. You know, there were lakes, but there were no rivers listed. And it was a head-scratcher for me, and I looked it up, and that was one of the first little Wesley and John conversations that caught my interest. I don't know if you remember the reason behind why there's no legitimate list of rivers in the United States. Do you, Wesley?
Mr. Roy, I love you guys for... John is no longer with us. For being who you are. Yes, I do. That is one of the great things you got involved in. Thank you.
You're welcome, Wesley. For the people playing outside, it's because rivers are not constant things, unfortunately. Small rivers dry up, new rivers develop where there weren't rivers. Major rivers can be and are documented to a degree, but minor rivers are so variable and transient that no legitimate governmental agency puts them in a book and binds that book. Because it's so, here today, gone tomorrow. So that was one of the earliest John and Wesley topics that caught my interest. Was what happens to an antenna as you electronically, not mechanically, as you made the actual conductor smaller and smaller in diameter. As it got infinitesimal, how did it affect the operation other than mechanically, which is a different topic. Just good old memories. Anyway, let's begin, and later on, if there are other questions or topics or comments, we'll address them as time goes on. First up for tonight is Rich, W2BZ. What's your question, comment, or topic for tonight, Rich? W2BZ, are you out there, Rich?
Roy, I'm out here. The link dropped for about 30 seconds. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. What can I tell you? The link is the link. Hopefully, this too shall pass.
Hey, Roy, 1 second, WS2N.
Yes, Paul?
About the link, you must have it set up a little differently. There's about a 250 millisecond delay. Flat Oaks is coming out first, followed by Selden. So, you know, there might be something going on there. But, we heard Rich good. Back to you.
Okay, I understand the crew is working on a different link technology. I think it's going to be voice over internet protocol, so it's in the midst of being fine-tuned, I gather.
I haven't heard, but I know that was in the plan, so maybe that's what's going on. But anyway, Rich is making it.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Paul. So Rich, what question or your topic for tonight?
Okay, good evening, Roy, and good evening, everybody. Well, I finally got on the low bands, as we used to call them, better known now as HF. And what I did was I constructed an inverted D antenna for 20 meters with a RF choke right at the top at the feed point. And I made about 5 contacts. Yesterday was a contest, so they'll answer anybody, just to make more points. but and everybody always gets a 5.9, so I really couldn't tell what my, you know, actual signal strength was. One thing that I cannot do without anymore is side by side with my Kenwood 440, which is old time, quote, old time transceiver, is my SDR receiver only. So I can watch where the action is and go right to it on my transceiver, on the 440. And after doing that for 2 days, there's no way that I could go backwards, that I could just tune around with the tuning dial up and down the band, up and down the band slowly to find out where the signals are. This way you can just see instantly where the signals are and then turn the tuning knob right to that frequency. So it's like a godsend for me. Back to the antenna. Let me drop for a second. This is a 20-meter antenna with two 16-foot legs on either side, which slope down about 45 degrees, something like that. The apex is about 20 feet off the ground. And at first, for some reason, I was getting like a 5-to-1 SWR, but then it started giving me like a 1.8, 1.9 SWR. I don't know what changed. This rig hasn't been on the air for 2 years, so maybe the roller inductors needed to get heated up or something, but the SWR did change. So, now I'm thinking about how the heck do I get on 40 meters? And I was thinking about that vertical where you,
Rich, I think you timed out the link or something, because all of a sudden you were talking and then it was nothing. So, I probably heard about half of what you just said. You were getting to the point of being interested to figure out how to talk on 40 meters, and you mentioned the vertical, and then the link kind of gave out.
Roy, W8CDM.
Yes, Andy.
Rich is still talking on Sylvan. Yeah, apparently the All-Star link timed out. Stopped.
Stand by 2H. This is NY2H.
You're good, Lou.
Okay. Yes, the first time the Sylvan timed out. This time it's gone also timed out. So this is the first week we're using the All-Star system for linking. So we have full duplex. I will look into these timeouts, but for the time being, try to keep your transmissions short. I know, Rich, you did drop it. Unfortunately, when you dropped it, it did not reset Glen Oak. So when you drop it, maybe you drop it for like a good 5 to 6 seconds, and things will work a little better for now. But I will look into it and try to get this working. This is a good test on the TechNet because we have a lot of people on, and so this is a good maiden voyage test, if you will. So back to net.
Okay, thank you very much, Lou. And of course, we all appreciate all the effort and time and trouble you take to make this repeater system as robust as it is. And we're more than happy to assist it in beta testing the newest link.
Roy, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you, Rich.
Okay, let me ask my my question really quick. I want to try to construct a 40-meter vertical. And you know that type of antenna that we were talking about where you have a length of wire going into the center conductor of a length of coax. Is there anything that I could insert into that configuration that would allow me to get on 40? Is there some kind of trap or something that I could do that would get me close to a reasonable SWR on 40?
Okay, I was waiting for everything to go out. No, unfortunately, the traps do not electrically lengthen radiators. They effectively shorten them. They make them function at a shorter distance to operate at higher frequencies. They don't lengthen them so that you can now use them on a longer frequency. What you're looking for is some method of loading the antenna so that it is electrically more inductive, and so it'll be resonant at lower frequencies. That's what people do all the time with wire antennas. Doing it with that interesting, unique antenna that works in the common mode would be probably next to impossible, because the mechanics involved just get too weird and too complicated. The bottom line is, theoretically, if you were to set up a vertical that measures 20, that was designed for your 20 meters, but you then inserted in each leg of the dipole a loading coil with sufficient inductance to negate the capacitive impedance at 40 meters as opposed to 20 meters, it would act as a somewhat resonant 40-meter antenna. It would have a higher Q. It would have a narrower bandwidth, so it would only tune to a portion of 40 meters. You'd have to rely somewhat more on a robust antenna tuning. But traps are certainly not things you should use. Traps when you want to have the antenna work as though it was shorter than it is, not longer than it is. You can lengthen electrically an antenna by either put a loading coil at the base, in the middle, at the end, or a capacitive hat at the edge. Those are the ways that you make them longer. Tend not to see too much of capacitive hats because they add a mechanical stressor to the design of the antennas. They take up a lot of space and wind resistance and such.
I was using a trap and loading coil interchangeably. My error. What is it about that design of that common mode antenna that sort of precludes doing anything like adding a loading coil?
Well, consider the pain in the backside it would be to how would you introduce on the coax portion that's operating in common mode. How would you wire it up robustly enough to act as a loading coil? You would have to cut the braid and then short it out with an external loading coil, which is a mechanical problem, and keeping it all together is a mechanical problem. And what would happen to the common mode? Because it would be no longer a coax cable, it would be a wire. So you don't have common mode the normal way. So it would just introduce a lot of unnecessary complications. The whole point of the design of that novel antenna is to be quick and easy, to be able to be rolled up in a bag and thrown up at a moment's notice. When you start trying to figure out how to put a loading coil inserted into the outer shield of a coax cable, it just introduces a lot of nuisance.
Okay, so it sort of defeats the common mode attributes of the antenna we're talking about. All right. The only other way I could possibly do it is have 33 feet on either side of the center, but it would have to be sort of an inverted T, but oriented horizontally, going into two trees separated by about 30 feet in front of my house. That's if my neighbor would let me run a wire to the tree that's in front of her house, which I doubt. But what negativity would I introduce by horizontally orienting an inverted V?
Well, the principal one is that of height. You have to understand that the reason why people design inverted Vs often is because a significant portion of the RF that comes off of a center-fed dipole is relatively closer to the center feed points than the edges. The current peaks at the center feed and the voltage peaks at the edges. So if you have to only raise the height of one portion of a center-fed dipole, the best place is the center. So you have an inverted V. If you rotate your inverted V 90 degrees and it's all on the same elevation above ground, you no longer have the benefit of the tip of the inverted V being higher than the rest. So you have the same problem that you have with center-fed dipoles close to the ground. We talked many Sunday nights about how as the center-fed dipole becomes closer and closer to the ground, it couples to the ground and bleeds off a lot of RF, and also if the reflection interacts in a way that most of your RF will be directed straight up above as a cloud warmer. That's very good for near vertical incident sky wave transmissions locally. It's awful for DXing. Theoretically, for a DX antenna, you want a very low takeoff angle that will skip the horizon and get into the ionosphere and reflect back up and down for a while. You do not want a near vertical incident sky wave. And increasing from a 20-meter antenna to a 40-meter antenna means that you're twice as close relatively to the ground as your previous antenna was, and if you rotate at 90 degrees, then it's all kind of close to the ground. So it'll be great for near communications on 40, isn't that very useful, but it won't be great for DXing.
The only other option I have is, you know, one long wire going to one of the trees, which would have to be a 66-foot wire, piece of wire. Now, do you feed on an end set, do you feed the 66 feet of wire at the apex of it before, you know, drops down, or do you feed it at the lowest point before it comes into the shaft?
WD28 Devo question.
Yes, Ed.
If you can put up a 66-foot long wire, why not use a lightweight center insulator and some relatively lightweight coax and just have it hang down from the middle? So it's kind of a little bit of a non-emergency. I mean, we used to do that at field day all the time.
Roy, could you relay that for me?
Ed was asking why you have to deal with it as an NFED. Why can't you just use the same length and tap it in the middle? And if it's a V as opposed to an inverted V, that probably would be a little bit more beneficial than introducing a 9-to-1 Balun and dealing with it as an NFED.
happen in the middle because the coax would be above the sidewalk outside my house. So whatever kind of wire I put up, I would have to get into that wire right by the entrance to my front door or living room where my shack is.
Okay, understood. Ed, any other comments?
Let me just make one general comment. I have found that there's a time and a place for making it very precise when you have to have visually controlled gain and directionality. With ham radio, it's really rather forgiving of errors. You really have to do a lot before you get a serious degradation of people. So there's really no point in beating yourself up to make it perfect. Good enough, it'll be virtually indistinguishable from working under normal circumstances.
Okay, Ed, I agree with you.
Really,
I mean, no one here has ever suggested the perfect antenna.
You
raise an interesting thing to talk about. You know, maybe if we had an antenna farm and about 15 acres of ground someplace. No rules or anything. But, yeah, everything is a compromise in the metropolitan area. And, you know, I think Rich appreciates that as well. I just want to get a little clarification of Rich's last question to me. He was asking at one point, do you terminate the NFED? The NFED, the NFED's a kind of a goofy sort of thing. I mean, it sort of depends on what frequency you're working on, what length it is, and the general environment around it. So you can't really specify accurately where the current peaks will be, except that the voltage peak will be probably close to the C point. So you just try and make the NFET as high as you can at one point or another, whatever is structurally strongest, and deal with it on that level rather than kind of bend over backwards so that one particular portion of the NFED is higher than the rest.
Well, if you can picture this, I have my 2 meter 440 vertical on a post out of my front door, the top part of which is about 20 feet in the air. So that's where the feed point is for the inverted V, by the way, which is very narrow banded. I'm surprised. I have to retune quite often, and I didn't think it would be so narrow. But anyway, so at the top of that, I could go from that to a tree about 20 feet off the ground, and then from the top of that come down to the ground. So 90% of the wire would be going from the top of my vertical, my 2 meter 440 vertical, into the tree, and it'd be about, let's say, 10 feet coming down into, maybe I should go back to my 49:1 un-un. If it is a true un-un, I made up a 49:1, and I try to ease that a couple.
Well, Rich, I don't know if you can hear me, but you timed out, I think, the old Starlink again.
WTTZ.
Yes, Rich, you timed out the All-Star link again.
Okay. What I was saying is maybe the best thing for me to try now that I have the bug, ask my neighbor, the nice neighbor, if I could put a wire into her tree coming down into a 49-to-1 on us.
Well, the problem is exactly what you have planned for this. Now, roughly half wave of 40 meters, I think, is something like, what, 65 feet as opposed to 63? So I'm not quite sure if it qualifies as a legitimate half wave end fed. Half wave end feds require a 49-to-1 ballast. Yours is kind of coming closer and closer to a non-resident end fed, in which most people feed that with a 9-to-1 on us. Yes, Ed? Well, I'm sure he has an antenna tuner, but a lot of antenna tuners aren't going to kind of make the difference between a 49-to-1 and a 9-to-1. So, you know, there's only so much you can do.
I just have the feeling that this level of bother is just not really that necessary. There's got to be a simpler way. To just slap up the dipole, avoiding the dipole from there, even if it isn't perfect. I have found that you can trap dipoles into what 95% as well as the most beautiful antenna, so
Well, I would agree with you, Ed. The problem, unfortunately, is that Rich doesn't own his property. He wants to have a very low appearance, and I think he feels that having the transmission line in the center of his antenna is going to be a flashing red light for other people to report him to the landlady and such, whereas he can sneak a feed point at the end of an end set. That's at least my understanding.
Do you have a good ground available?
I don't know. Do you have a good ground available, Rich?
Yeah, I have. I can't put any radials out, but I do have a 8-foot ground rod in the ground right where the wire would come close to the house.
I think a round rod and a random length long wire, as long as you can make it in the tennis tournament, should work fine.
And just no need for any kind of 9-to-1 or 49-to-1. When do you use a 9-to-1, Roy, and when do you use a 49-to-1?
Usually the practice generally is, because modern day antenna tuners usually are not as robust as older versions. In the old days, they had these massive parallel pi networks and such. They could easily do transitions of impedances, you know, 10-to-1 mismatches were no problem, maybe 15. Nowadays, especially, the Japanese built-in antenna tuners fail at 3-to-1. They don't go any farther than that. So the usual practice, at least I've seen in the literature, is that if you are using a true half-wave resonant end-fed, you insert it into a 49-to-1 or a 64-to-1 unun. If you are not using a actual half-wave end-fed, but a more random end-fed, then usually people recommend a 9-to-1 ballast before it gets to your antenna tuner.
Okay, that's what I'm going to try. The next thing I'm going to try is a 10-meter common mode antenna, quote-unquote common mode antenna, and then I'll wrestle with this long wire, but I agree with that. Maybe a random length long wire going into the antenna tuner might suffice for at least CW, 100 watts of CW on 40. I'm going to give both a try, and I'll report back. Thanks, Roy.
Certainly, yes.
One, as a general rule, an antenna that's too long is usually fairly easy to see. It's when an antenna's too short that you're really taxing it out. Two, I believe MFJ still has their MFJ 9, 10, and 10, so those work very, very well. They cover a wide range. Yeah, if you're trying to those kinds of rings and automatic antenna tuners are very narrow range. Yeah, they're just confusing antennas that are just a little bit off. And to answer the question, when do you use all these hard bars, you know, 9 to 1, 49 to 1, balance line? When you're building a phased array of Yagi, that's when it's critical. When you want to have all of the beams coincide, you have the narrowest beam. Then you play your chance to achieve justification. But to just get out to work some guy in the new guy or what, it's total over.
Okay, Ed, I understand the way you're seeing things. The problem is, again, the antenna tuners are kind of Achilles' heel. Some of them are good, some of them are moderately good, some of them are god-awful. I remember Dick May, rest in peace, he regularly would ask himself why manufacturers don't publish proper SIP charts demonstrating the range of impedances that can be successfully transformed. Theoretically, you can do that. You probably would need an electrical engineering degree or maybe a week or of some kind of limited study to be able to translate a Smith chart into the proper information. But it would be a nice thing to do. The problem is that manufacturing of antenna tuners have seen cost reductions that limit their ability. I have a PALSTAR antenna tuner that I like a lot. It operates as a T-type impedance transformer, which is a design generally is more expensive, but it allows for a wider range of impedance transformations. My understanding is MFJ and a lot of the less expensive antenna tuners, modern antenna tuners, use impedance transform circuits called L circuits, which are efficient and lower cost, but at the cost of a lower range of correction. So, you know, sometimes if you can get away and if you can transform your impedance to 50 or near 50 ohms where your transmitter won't cough up a furball, then great, so be it. It's just that my understanding is, and through the literature is, that without something like the 9 to 1 or a random NFET or a 49 or 64 to 1 or a half wave where the impedance density 3,000 ohms, most antenna tuners simply will not correct that much. But, you know, if it does, then great, go with it.
Roy, I've never read those articles you read, so I just slapped together some crappy antenna and it always got out. You see, if you don't know what you're doing is wrong, you might just work.
That's true, Ed. That your success is the ultimate demonstration that you did the right thing. I had situations where my previous antenna tuner could not correct the impedance of, I think it was my 10-meter dipole. I actually had to go to the trouble of introducing a jumper cable that added 6 feet to the transmission line to rotate the impedance such that that particular antenna tuner was finally able to correct it to a range that my radios would allow. Now, modern day radios can be very persnickety. I have a linear amplifier that if I show it anything above a 1.5 standing wave ratio, it just squeals like a pig and just sits there and does nothing. Say again, I didn't quite understand.
In the middle of your transmission, I heard Lou's voice and one two eight in the background. Is Lou there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm trying to tell the EastEnders why the repeater timed out again. When you guys, it clocked about 4 or 5 minutes because every time somebody dropped on Glen Oak, it wasn't sufficient to bring the Zelda machine down. So you guys are really going to have to put a little more space between transmissions if you want this to work right now. We'll work on it during the week, but for now you're going to have to do that, otherwise the machines are going to trouble.
Okay, got it. W2BZ.
And Roy, just as an aside, are you looking at that page that we discussed?
Yes.
Okay, so on the bottom panel, you see we do have someone coming in from All-Star. On the top, you see the Echolink connection. But if you look at the first two entries on the top panel, the Zelda machine and the Glen Oaks machine, under received, you'll see a timer. Right now, we're about 13 seconds on Zelda and 16 on Glen Oaks. When one of them approaches like 2.5, 3 minutes, we're going to have an issue. And you'll see sometimes if somebody doesn't drop quickly enough, one of the two machines may not reset. So that's a little guide you could look at to kind of maybe get a feel of what's going on. But if you leave a little space right now, it seems to be okay. NY2H is clear.
Okay, Lou, understood. I'm going to try and get into the habit of waiting for the whole tail to drop entirely, just to be on the safe side, and I'll look more closely at the window. I got 25 windows open every technical deck, so I'll make a point of focusing on this one a bit more than the rest of them. Thank you, Lou. So I hope I made my point. I agree with you, Ed. Ultimately, if it works, that's great. If it works, it works. I'm just kind of making it a little bit less problematic and increasing the chances of it working because the nature of modern-day antenna tuners can be variable and problematic under those circumstances. So, Rich, if you're able to get whatever it is that you get up on the air tuned at 50 ohms or approximately 50 ohms, feel free to give it a try and see what happens. Also, want to remind him, Rich, that you can listen also through WebFDR to other radios and get an idea if your signal is coming across there. And also, there are things like Whisper, where you can, if you can hook it up to a computer, you can send the signal out and look on a map to see where it was picked up to give you an idea of how far the antenna gets out under certain given propagation conditions.
Roy, how do you measure impedance on the nano?
It's part of the SWR. If you set it to give an SWR with 50 ohms, it'll give you, you know, whatever, 1 to 1, 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 4. If you select the actual impedance, it'll give you the complex number of the impedance of the antenna as you sweep frequency.
Boy, another coming, WC3AV.
Yeah, sure, Ed, but give a little time for everything to reset, just in case.
Wesley acknowledged. Boy, I am a tremendous fan of that panel. I am a tremendous fan of network analyzers. On the other hand, I think they can be more confusing if you're not familiar with them than helpful. I think if you're doing the game you're talking about, nothing is as good as an old-fashioned, cheap and dirty SWR. It's simple, it's easy to understand. There's no way you can go down the rabbit hole to insanity on them. If you know what you're doing, there's nothing like a vector network analyzer. If you don't know what you're doing, it can pass a disaster. Like so many other things in this plan. Roy, don't forget, what you're saying. Back to us.
Yes, Wesley is recognized. We'll get to you in a second, Wesley. Ed, I agree with you. The simplest tool for that works is probably the best tool. And as far as I'm aware, assuming that Rich has an antenna tuner that has an SWR meter, because all the ones I own do, that's probably the best to do it. You know, if you want to know how the antenna looks over a wide spectrum, and you want to put in a little of that effort, then yeah, you can have a nice graph with a nice image that tells you, okay, its lowest resonance is at such and such a point, and you know, then if you want to measure it not at the antenna feed but at the output of the antenna tuner, you know, how good you can tune it to a resonance. But also, you could just check on the SWR meter, and as you make the adjustment, try and get it as optimally as possible. And if you can get the SWR meter to report that the ratio is close to 1-to-1, then you can let go with the transmitter. If you find that the SWR doesn't go lower than 3 or 4, then you need to rethink things.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, Wesley, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I have a few vector network analyzers. So, one of the ways is directional coupler. So, VNA can be used to measure the S parameter of the system and determine the SWR value from the reflection coefficient and input impedance. But there is a number of videos on YouTube showing sweep on antenna system, antenna transmission line transmat to measure the VSWR reflection coefficient and all that. Okay, I'm back. And to monitor changes of the behavior and make adjustments. Well, the basic statement is setting the traces that you want to display. Back to you, I got a handle on it.
Okay, once again, I'm AC2GS, and the reason why I'm letting the repeater drop is just to kind of improve our chances of not timing out the new All-Star Link. Wesley, I appreciate the discussion of how DNA work, and we could always have those, but, you know, we're trying to keep it a little bit simple, and we're trying to keep it functional, you know, utility. The easiest way for Rich to figure out if his antenna is going to operate correctly, to probably would be simply to run it through the antenna sooner, SWR meter, get an idea what the lowest SWR he can establish without any other impedance transformation on him, and go along with that. You know, again, if he dials up the antenna tuner to its optimum lowest point, and he still has the SWR read as greater than 5 to 1, it's the universe's little way of saying this antenna tuner ain't going to handle that much. So he should consider using a 9 to 1 balance in addition to the antenna tuner to get it the rest of the way. You know, to introduce the nano DNA. Yeah, sure you can, and I might, because I be more curious about the whole sweep of the impedances across the entire 40-meter range. But it's not necessary for the sake of figuring out if that antenna is going to work without an UNA. So I think we should kind of keep it simple. And, you know, Ed is the dean of keep it simple.
I have to agree with you. The useful part of it is, sorry for interruption, there is a number of videos on YouTube. One of them is, the name is How to Use the Nano DNA to Sweep and Measure an Antenna System SWR and Optimize its Tune. So simply put those words and you're going to see. And then the rest of it I'm not going to repeat, but it's actually the procedure that you know.
Voice.
Yeah, I'm just giving it a little bit of a chance for resets to happen, because Wesley is still kind of fast-keying like the usual weeks that we have here. We got to be a little bit slower to key up because of the All-Star link that's just been introduced needs to be kind of fine-tuned. So keep that in mind, everyone. Don't just pick up the mic as soon as I drop it or someone else drops it. Give a little bit of a pause. It might be a little annoying to some people, but that's less annoying than if we time out the All-Star link.
Can I just say something?
Certainly, Ed. I don't particularly want you to perhaps end it, but yeah, you could say something.
Let me tell you why I am a minimalist. I have worked 2 years ago on an antenna that consisted of 36 five-element jockeys, all of which were phase shifted for having a narrow gene steerable. After that, you have no idea how appealing keeping it simple is.
I understand that, and I agree with you, although sometimes I don't like to kind of fall into rabbit holes, but I like to occasionally look at the surface of a rabbit hole and kind of, just for the sake of education and informing people about some of the little nuances. Again, I agree with you. If you can keep it simple, then so be it. From what I've read, it's not always that easy with modern-day technology. There are some limitations of modern tuners. Now, in this case, I might be completely wrong. You might be able to plug in the end of his NFET directly into his antenna tuner, twirl the magic dials, have it come down to an impedance of 50, an SWR of 1 to 1, and he's out and about on 40 meters. And if so, then great. But just as a proviso, in the back of your head, if you do all of the above, and at the end of the story, it doesn't say 1 to 1, and it doesn't say 2 to 1, and it, you know, it's 4 to 1, 5 to 1, or it's off the scale of the measurement device, then in the back of your mind, you kind of have to say, oh, shucks, I guess it's time to pull out that 9 to 1 on it. That's all I'm saying. This is not like I'm Moses coming down from the mountain with some tablets. You know, what I say, check it out on the internet, check it out on the textbook. You know, I can fail as much as any other human being. But keeping it simple, I agree, Ed, is great, but sometimes you have to sort of know about a plan B.
Yeah, let me just make a point about life in general. There is nothing rarer than a failed experiment. Almost always, when something doesn't work out, you learn a lot. So you start for plan B way further ahead than you already started planning.